Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Michael Shermer, the skeptic. You've heard what we've been talking about, and we'll get you involved when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Back with Michael Shermer, back with your phone calls right here. What do you think, Michael, in your opinion, is the most flagrant abuse of people who just want to believe everything?
Well, I guess it would depend on the consequences to other people in society. Religion certainly has a long track record of that. It's, you know, a checkered past for sure. People are talking about ISIL, you know, beheading people. Well, Christians used to behead people all the time and burn them to death in the Middle Ages. That was quite common. And they got civilized. They went through the Enlightenment and came out the other end a peaceful religion. Almost all Christians are fully embrace all the rights revolutions that I talk about in the moral arc.
But, and the Saudis are still doing it.
Yes, yes, exactly. So there's pockets of religion, Islam in particular, not Western Muslims who have embraced the West and our traditions and rights traditions, but those in not in the West, those who still think it would be a good idea to go back to a theocracy, to, you know, a sort of a barbaric Middle Ages, you know, a few men run the whole thing, and they believe that the creator of the universe wrote a book and handed down the laws. That's called Sharia. And, you know, that women should not have an education, shouldn't be allowed to drive. I mean, these are just barbaric ideas. And here I'm not attacking Muslims in the West. I'm just saying certain U.S., certain ideas are bad that lead people to do bad things. And, you know, religion's at the top of the heap on that, I'm afraid.
Well, it is. And it's interesting, in the name of religion, how many people have died and still die.
Yes, and of course my critics, you know, counter, well, what about Stalin and Mao Zedong and Hitler? Well, but nobody's killing in the name of atheism. Those were faux religions. I mean, Marxism is a faux religion. It's, you know, there's this idea that, you know, there's an absolute truth, there's a perfect right way that we can, that we should live, and we know what that right way is, and we have to force everybody to live like that, or else we'll kill them. That itself is a bad idea. you know, as I was saying earlier, like I document moral arc, you know, the application of science tells us that nobody knows how to run a country, and there is no perfect right way. So we have to have an open democracy that's open to criticism and change, and or else, you know, we're doomed. And there's now 118 liberal democracies in the world. 118. There were zero in 1800. In 1920, women couldn't even vote in America, so we weren't even a real democracy in 1920. And, you know, that's how far we've come. Now, there's still a long ways to go. There's 192 countries, and 118 are democracies, the rest are not. So we're not there yet, but, you know, it's just a matter of time, I think.
Well, with Dr. Michael Shermer, his latest work is called The Moral Arc. What's the worst you think could happen? What's the downside of everything that you've looked at in your career?
Probably, you know, nuclear war still. You know, I do track, I document, I have this beautiful graph in the moral arc of this decline of nuclear weapons. It was, the high was 70,000 active nuclear weapons in the world in the late 80s, and we're down to under 10,000 now. So that's a huge decrease.
Well, those 10 could still destroy the planet.
But 10 could still destroy the planet. Yep, absolutely. That's still a concern, and we're no longer worried about the Soviets. I don't think even Putin would pull the trigger on that. I'm slightly concerned about terrorists getting fissile material. They can't make it. It's too complex. But they could buy it on the black market, or just buy an out-and-out weapon that might get loose. So there's pretty tight controls on that. You know, the Soviets have wised up to keeping track of all that. But it's not impossible. So I do worry about that, because there's plenty of people. See, the way deterrence worked, you know, mutual assured destruction in the Cold War, was that both sides assumed the other guy wanted to live. But if you have people
right.
that want to die,
then you got a problem.
And they're looking forward to it. You know, 72 virgins and all that. Okay, so the calculation, the rational calculation for mutual assured destruction isn't going to work.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Nathan is in Tennessee, first-time caller. Welcome to the program, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's actually not the first time I've called. It just seems to be the only line I can get in.
Talk
to you again.
All right, we'll bend the rules for you.
Just real quick, I tuned in shortly after the program started, so I may be pulling this out of context, but I heard your guest talk about vaccines And I've been listening as to, you know, what the context would be as far as, you know, the freedom in being encroached upon by pharmaceutical companies, doctors, whatever, as well as the science of it. And a little bit of background on me. When I grew up, I wasn't vaccinated hardly at all. And my mother was a registered nurse. She did a lot of research back in the 80s and 90s and chose not to vaccinate me. And I didn't receive any vaccinations for about 17 years until I joined the military when I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got bombarded with everything the military is pumping out, you know, since 9/11, I started to get sick. My arthritis kicked in my back. You know, I started to have chronic injuries, you know, popping up, things of that nature. And what my concern is, you know, I'm getting ready to exit the military. But my concern is for my children, because, you know, we have this anti-vaccination campaign, you know, going on. You know, and I'm not quite bought into that completely. But what I am bought into is, at what point do companies that try to force this medicine down our throats and inject foreign substances into our children from birth?
Well, what I want you to do first and foremost is listen to our show Thursday night, where we're going to have the great vaccine discussion on that. But Michael, you had mentioned that there is an issue of not giving people the rights to decide what they want.
Yes, well, so the issue here, and by the way, currently the states determine that, and most states, you know, you do have the option to bow out of it for religious exemptions.
Which they may stop.
Yeah, they may stop, because look what's been happening, because there's something called the herd immunity. You have to have about 96% of a population vaccinated, or else communicable diseases can come roaring back, which is exactly what's happened at Disneyland and other little pockets in California and Oregon and Colorado. And the reason for that is because too many of these parents are, and they're not really doing it for religious reasons. They're really doing it because they have these irrational fears that, what I think are irrational fears, and the CDC agrees, that, you know, that their kid's going to get autism, for example. And there's no link between vaccinations and autism. None. The one study was...
You need to talk to Rand Paul on that one, Michael.
Well, yeah, I know. Him and Chris Christie, you know, they're saying political things. I don't know. You know, he's a doc. You know, he knows that the vaccines work. So, like your caller, though, you know, of course, we can always find anecdotes. You know, there's vaccines are not 100%, you know, foolproof in terms of...
Well, no,
of
I mean, look at this year's flu vaccine. It doesn't work.
But, you know, flu vaccine is a different question here. We're talking about stopping smallpox, measles, things like that. I mean, in the long run, the goal would be to eradicate these diseases off the earth. It can't come back. But you can't do that unless everybody's vaccinated. And so, you know, I'm a small L libertarian. I think people should have lots of freedom. But again, the freedom for me to swing my arm ends at your nose. We have consequences of our actions. So, you know, in a free society, I guess you could say, well, if you don't want to vaccinate your kid, fine, but you can't take him to public school where there's other kids. You can't take him anywhere where there's other kids, out of that concern that you could cause the death of others. And, you know, just like we have laws about you can't leave your kid in a car when it's 110 degrees out and he dies, that's against the law. The parents
yet some still do that.
Yep, and it's against the law. Parents go to jail for that. And yet there's parents that don't take their kids to doctors and the kids die, and they do this for religious reasons. Christian Scientists, for example, think you can just pray it away, or that, you know, they don't accept the germ theory of disease. They think disease is caused by, you know, just bad behavior, bad thoughts, mm-hmm. whatever. Well, the state tends to step in those cases, but not always. And the consequences are deadly. And so there I do think that, you know, our freedoms have to be somewhat limited.
Do you think states, though, should have the right to tell parents that their child must get chemo or must get radiation?
You mean for cancer?
Cancer cases, yeah.
No, no, that would be different, because there's no...
But
no,
that has happened, though.
There's no... really? I didn't know
that.
Yeah,
states have forced people, have forced parents who... And I think in one case they took the kid.
I had not heard that. That's bizarre, huh? That's weird. Yeah, well, I'm not a medical doc, so I don't follow that super closely, but that I don't see why that would be, because there's no third party being harmed by not having I mean, chemo is brutal on kids. I mean, I could see not wanting to do that, sort of a quality of life choice. But that's different than vaccines, where your kid can actually contaminate another kid and cause, harm or death. That's a different story.
Next up, let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hello there, Bill.
Yes. Hi, George. Hi. Hi, Dr. Shermer.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a liberal progressive Democrat myself and a rational atheist myself, and I've
Yay.
spoken to you in the past. I agree with you totally. And in fact, just by chance today, this afternoon, I bought your book, The Moral Arc.
Oh,
I'm looking at it
cool.
right now, and I want to relate. Chapter 4, the title of it is Why Religion is Not the Source of Moral Progress, to what President Obama said correctly. He was 200% correct when he said Friday at that prayer breakfast. And by the way, as an atheist myself, I'm not very comfortable at all with a president going to a prayer breakfast. But that aside, what he said was totally correct, and he was skewered by the right wing, especially the religious right wing, the fundamentalist Christian right wing. And me as an atheist, I am for civil liberties and civil rights and freedoms, and I do give money also to civil rights and civil liberties causes and atheist causes, as well as the ASPCA and the Humane Society for Animal Rights myself. So to get to my question to you is, do you agree with me? I know you agree with me, but do you agree with me that President Obama was correct that he should not have been attacked by the people like Rick Santorum, the fundamentalist Christian right, with what you said about the Crusades and the Inquisition as well and other things? Religion, people who are Christians should not be on their high horse thinking that they're so good, quote unquote, and only Islam is bad.
No,
Christianity.
he was doing is citing historical facts.
Yes.
I mean, if you just look at the Middle Ages, Christians were beheading and burning, burning witches, beheading Jews. They were beheading Jews out of fear that they were contaminating, poisoning wells, causing the plague and other plagues, killing Christian children to take their blood for matzah, and in general, because they killed Jesus, which is, this is a bizarre idea. Jesus was Jewish. The Romans killed Jesus. The Jews didn't kill their own. And in any case, Jesus had to, if you believe, if you're a Christian, Jesus had to die for your sins. So shouldn't you be thanking the Jews for killing you? The whole thing is absurd. And in any case, the Christianity and Judaism went through the Enlightenment. They have absorbed all the rites revolutions that we've gone through, and they fully embrace all these, this openness to other people, and they don't act violent. I mean, the only, when's the last like abortion clinic bombing? It was like in the late 80s or something. I mean, it's so rare compared to Islam. And so, Islam's the elephant in the room, and kudos to President Obama for saying what's on his mind. He can do that because he doesn't have to campaign again. Obama was anti-gay marriage when he was campaigning in 08. He said marriage between a man and a woman, and he changed his mind in 2012. Everybody's changing. They're shifting. It happens slowly, day by day, year by year. Before you know it, we're there.
Hey, here's that case, by the way. A state can force a 17-year-old cancer patient to receive chemotherapy treatments against her will, according to the Connecticut State Supreme Court. This is brand new.
Wow. Yeah.
The court found that the state has not violated the rights of a 17-year-old identified as Cassandra, who's receiving forced chemo for Hodgkin's lymphoma. She refused treatment after her diagnosis in September because she believes chemo would cause significant long-term bodily harm like organ damage, infertility. Connecticut's Department of Children and Families disagreed. It mandated that Cassandra receive medical care because the life of a child should be protected in a case like this, where the medical consensus is treatment is necessary. Unbelievable.
I would say the state definitely overstepped there. That's totally inappropriate.
We agree on that one, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Next up, let's go to Mark in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Welcome to the program, Mark. You're on with Michael Shermer. Go ahead.
Yes, Mike and George, how are you all doing?
Hi, good.
Good. I wanted to bring up the issue of these inoculations, okay?
Sure.
And about 3.5 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I was on YouTube, and I saw this woman. I was thinking her name was Emma, but it was Joanne something. She worked for the CDC as a virologist, a PhD virologist, and a biochemist for 20 plus years. Okay, this woman lives down in Panama, in deep rural Panama. Okay, she came up here. This woman was terrified. I mean, I'm pretty good at judge of, you know, a person's character, and, mm-hmm. and you know whether what they're saying is true or not. And this woman, everything she said, in my opinion, was the honest to God's truth. But anyway, she flew up commercially. She immediately got into a Cessna and flew up to a municipal airport up in Missouri. Okay, she met with vet Jesse Ventura. He's standing inside two large hangar doors, which were open about 15 feet or so. The Cessna rolled up. She got out. She walked up to him. He asked her if she wanted to go inside. There was an office inside and sit down. She said, no, I'll stay right here. And he said, I guess when this is over, you're going to get in the plane and head back, you know, to the international airport. She said, you're dang right. But anyway, so, you know, she started talking. He asked her a few questions, but he just let her, you know, give her spiel. And she said that the globalist plan is to, like, one out of every 30 inoculations will be a live, active, infectious, you know, influenza virus. All right? And this will be the beginning of a pandemic. And once people start getting infected, they're going to go to the mist, you know, type, a nasal type.
Yeah, the sprays.
Spray, and which will be all active, live, infectious virus. Okay, and this is going to cause a global pandemic that will wipe out, you know, millions and millions, tens, possibly 100 million people or more. Okay, and she said there's a point coming where you will be forced, if you haven't had the inoculation, they're going to have checkpoints. Well, they will give you that, inoculate you right there on the road.
Well, look, I'm not going to deny, and Michael, I want you to chime in here while we've got a few seconds, but I'm not going to not deny that if we ever got to the pandemic stage, we could have checkpoints.
Yeah, I guess that's not impossible, but I think pretty unlikely, the scenario your caller just described, very unlikely. I mean, you know, smallpox wiped out, you know, millions back in the end of the First World War. You know, the chance of that happening again now with vaccinations, very, very slim. Pandemics happening the other way, in either direction, I think very unlikely. Again, something we should pay attention to, but, you know, here we're drifting off into the kind of conspiratorial, you know, they want this day. Well, who's they, you know, who is the they, you know, this is the CDC, Obama, you know, what, you know, Dick Cheney, George Bush, who's they? You know, this is always the problem with
they, Michael, are everywhere. Hey, we're going to come back, take some final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, I'll be talking with Dr. Artie Six Killer Clark about sky people. It's a great story. We'll be back in a moment, though, with final calls with Dr. Michael Shermer in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I don't know what happened yesterday, but our viewership for Beyond Belief, highest it's been in a few years. It's amazing. You can watch that program. You can watch it free for a while at beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. And if you've got a setup where you can watch internet programs on your flat screen, it really looks cool. beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Michael Shermer with us. Michael, your book, The Moral Arc, is struck a nerve with Amazon.com. It's creeping up the list.
Oh, good.
it's moving.
See, you have a lot of fans out there.
We have many. And you have a few here, too, I guess, huh?
Well, I hope so. You know, I mean, it's just in an open-minded approach to the world and in anything you want to discuss. It's fine. It's you know, we're not against anything being real. It's just we just need evidence. I mean, I'd be thrilled if there were extraterrestrials and we came into contact with them. As I said, I think they're probably out there. You know, and getting in contact with them would be one of the great, you know, great things that ever happened.
If you had a police officer who came to you and said, Mr. Shermer, I have to tell you this story. I was driving in my cruiser. I saw an egg-shaped UFO on the side of the road. There were two occupants. this thing was there. I saw the pod marks. Mm-hmm. These entities got in it when they saw me, and it took off. And if he was a police officer, and he's not joking, I mean, he truly believes he saw what he saw, what would you say as the skeptic to that story? Because that happened in Socorro, New Mexico, years ago with a police officer who has since died.
Mm-hmm. Well, then obviously I can't check with him. But
you cannot check with him. You just have to trust me on his story.
In general, these cases tend to either be one of two types. One is they're verifiable, but they're not particularly interesting. Like, you know, hundreds of people or police or valid observers, reliable observers saw something. You know, like the Phoenix lights. Lots and lots of people saw the Phoenix lights.
So you agree people saw something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah, for sure. But the question is, what is
it? What did they see?
You know, lights in the sky could be any number of things: military aircraft, flares, experimental aircraft. I mean, the police officer maybe saw some kind of experimental aircraft. You know, they're out in Area 51 and other places. You know, they're experimenting with all kinds of technologies, and saucer-shaped aircraft were not uncommon back in the 50s that they were experimenting with. And or the Delta Wing, B-2 bomber. You know, this is a pretty spooky-looking thing if you didn't know what it was. If we didn't see it on the news and stuff, and if it's still secret, it would look pretty, extraterrestrial. But we should always remember that UFO, unidentified flying object, unidentified just means we don't know what it is. Doesn't mean extraterrestrial. It doesn't mean, your pet theory is right. It just means we don't know. And we do know that governments do have national secrets.
Sure.
They don't tell citizens. Yeah. We know this from the NSA revelations, thanks to Snowden. Wow, our government was doing all sorts of things. So by definition, that's a conspiracy. You know, these things do happen. It's true. But the fact that they happen for, like, keeping national secrets, the NSA spying on its own citizens to try to catch terrorists, doesn't mean, for example, that they're trying to vaccinate everybody and kill everybody, or created AIDS to kill blacks, or aliens covering up aliens. It only means the one thing we know that it means.
But they might have done all that. We know, for example, that in the 50s, they did spray biologicals over St. Louis to test effects on people.
Yes, that's right. And so we have to take it case by case and not just say blanket, once we know A happened, that means B, C, and D happened. No, it just means we know A happened. You have to just take it from there.
Next up, let's go to Honolulu. Chris is with us. Thank you, Chris. Go ahead.
Aloha, George and Michael.
You too.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, Michael, I'm a hardcore Christian, and I'm going to buy your book because I think science needs some morals, and I love the title, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
But before I ask my question about evolution specifically, I do have to say it's a God-given, undeniable fact that Coast to Coast is a glorious place where atheists, Christians, Muslims, Jews, we could all meet and have a wonderful debate that is just awesome.
Amen.
George, I don't know how you guys do it every night.
Well,
God bless you.
Got a great staff.
You guys work so hard to bring this for us. And I just love you, and I bless you. And Michael, you're awesome too, and scary at the same time.
Yeah, he is. Hey, thanks for the call. Michael, I do want to ask you this question, and that has to do with debate. Whether anyone agrees or not, it seems to me that nowadays it's not a discussion, it's an argument. It's a screaming match.
You mean in politics?
In everything. It's a shouting session. Look, if people, you believe in vaccination, somebody else doesn't. But, there should be discussion there. A lot of people will scream about it, or GMOs, they scream about it. I'm not a believer in man-made global warming, but I'm not screaming at you because you believe it. What's going on in society where that's happening?
Yeah, well, I think the internet certainly fuels some of that. It gives people a safe haven to just blast away. I mean, I'm getting emails here right and left from your listeners, and they're pretty harsh. I can't read some of them on the air. So I think that's true. you know, it's like maybe some political talk shows like Rush and Bill O'Reilly, they kind of fuel the anger and the hatred between political parties. And I think maybe that does happen across culture, thanks to the internet and multimedia sources that allow more voices to be heard, but also allow that anonymity where you can just blast away. It's like people in a car will flip other people off, flip them the finger or whatever, and say, scream and yell when they wouldn't do that if they weren't in their car. It's something like that. But you're right. We have to have an open dialogue. I mean, we could all be wrong about any number of our beliefs. I could be wrong about vaccines and global warming, whatever. It's entirely possible. The only way to find out is, open debate and dialogue and conversation and checks and balances and critiques and so on. That's why we have to have freedom of speech and freedom of the press and, freedom of religion and freedom. We have to let everybody have their say, and then let the marketplace of ideas decide.
Let's go to Paul, Queens, New York, now east of the Rockies. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah, guys. My question to you is, Mr. Sherman, is in regards to inoculation, since we've inoculated all of America, how come the other side politically, the World Health Organization, the CDC, my question to you is, how come we can't, the people trying to come over here, inoculating before to get here, and over 25 years it took when World Health Organization was around, has inoculated half of the countries, and they have worse disease than we do. My other question to you is, economically, I work for a living. See, I bust my butt. I drive. I deliver and stuff now. I believe you're a professor, sir, or a doctor in a university?
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, I put my day job is publishing Skeptic Magazine, but yes.
Okay. So what I like to know is, all these universities have these great ideas. Where is the billions of dollars they have in funds and the billionaires that fund them? Let me see them take all that money right now and start jobs instead of the regular person trying to start the job, because it's a lot harder. These guys who are billionaires in universities who have all these great ideas, I'd like to see them start some jobs. And if they fail, they fail. And you lose your money, and you lose your money. But the person who works on the street has to butt his butt to get somewhere. And one thing I wanted to make a comment on is, I know, that the other guy who was earlier, complaining about Christians and everything about, Obama. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, this is the now time. These are the guys who are killing 100,000 people. Today, a girl, Kayla, got killed. A citizen got kidnapped, which nobody should be kidnapping anybody. But she died, and there is no answers. Everybody's dabbling around, and she's dead. So, we could talk about, we're going to wait a few hundred years, blah, blah, blah. But people are dying. We need solutions. How are we going to stop these guys instead of waiting months while they kill more people?
Yes, it's a good point. Things like ISIL that erupt like that. Hey, when Al-Qaeda says you're crazy, when members of Al-Qaeda said you've gone too far, man, you are out there.
They've gone too far.
That is the case of ISIL.
See, they've gone
too far. And there are people that do that. They just, their brains get contaminated with, just extreme ideas. And they just, take, these are often young men, looking to cause trouble. They're looking for status, whatever their motives are, often also religious. The only way to stop them is temporarily is militarily. There's just no other solution. You just got to stop up, just like Jordan did. When they burned that pilot, they said, that's it. No more negotiations. We're sending in the troops and the planes and so on. And sometimes that's what you have to do. I'm a big supporter. My whole book, the whole point of my book, The Moral Arc, is, science and reason and expanding the moral sphere through better ideas. But it took a war to end slavery in the United States, the land of the free. It took 600,000 dead and the law. And, I opened my book with the march from Selma to Montgomery, Dr. Martin Luther King. They took them three times, and it wasn't until President Johnson sent in the troops and said, these people are going to march, and we're going to protect them, and you're not going to stop them, and that's it. Kennedy had to send the troops into Alabama to stop, to prevent Governor Wallace from stopping segregation of schools. Sometimes you have to do that. I hate saying it because I don't like violence. But sometimes you have to have a strong hand. You have to have a strong military, strong police, strong rule of law, because not everybody wants to follow the rules and play nice.
We have time for a few more calls here. We go next to Portland, Oregon. Chuck's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Chuck, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, sir.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble here with your guest about climate change, because at the beginning he said it's an undeniable fact that humans are causing it. Now he's saying he could be wrong about it. So which is it? I'm trying to be respectful here, but it seems to me like you're more of a propagandist than a scientist. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I went to your website and I looked at an article that was published about climate change, published by a Don Prothero. You know who that is?
Yes, of course.
Okay, well, he starts out by insulting a very distinguished atmospheric scientist, Richard Lindzen, who's from MIT, calling him a global warming denier who said that smoking doesn't cause cancer. And I know Lindzen well enough to know that he never said that. So how could you publish that? That's the first question.
Yep, okay.
And the second
let me take that. So first of all, how could I say I could be wrong? Because all scientists would say I could be wrong. I mean, that's the case for everything. That's the whole point of science, is that there are no absolute truths that we believe no matter what. You know, evidence could come in, we could change our mind, and I would. Yeah, Richard Lindzen is a climate scientist at MIT. It's true. He's one of the few climate skeptics that actually has any training in climate science.
And the article says he's not a climate scientist, and he is. So you admit he is.
No, I don't think the I have to look at that.
That does. It says he's not a climate scientist.
I don't think
that's what your article said, that was written by Don Prothero.
Uh-huh.
It's right there because I'm looking at it.
Uh-huh.
And then,
okay.
Gotta
believe him, Michael. Go ahead.
Then we go to this horrible instrument, this temperature record he shows, which has been thoroughly debunked by credible scientists, and it was a hockey stick by Michael Mann. And you know why that was discredited? It's because he used the tree ring data to try to show temperatures in this last century were going up at an unprecedented rate, and the tree rings didn't show what he wanted them to, except for a few selected ones. So he used those and then chopped it off at a convenient point where he mixed the instrumental record with it, which is an absolute no-no in science. And Ross McKentrick and Steve McIntyre thoroughly debunked this, yet this guy continues to use it.
Nevertheless, other data sets show the trend of warming. Lots and lots and lots of data sets from all over the world, lots of different scientists, not just Michael Mann, lots of different labs, not just those funded by the U.S. government, keep coming to the same conclusion. Global warming is real and primarily human caused.
No, they don't, sir. They do not.
Yes,
come to
they
the
do.
Same
absolutely.
Conclusion.
97%
that's a
of scientists agree
that you said
global
yourself,
warming is real
and not true.
And human caused.
And the actual
okay, guys, you're stepping over each other, so it's not going to happen this way. But bottom line is, there's a big difference. The camp is out there, left and right. Remember when you were with me in the skeptic's cage, Michael?
I do, yes. That was
three
fun.
Go in, one comes out. Might be that way, too. Chuck, I appreciate your call. And you could be right. You could be right. Let's go to Steve in Sacramento. Steven, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Hey, I've heard the president and also, you know, everybody make allusions to the similarities between ISIS and...
Oh, well. Try to call back, Chuck. We'll keep the line open for you if we can. Amber in San Antonio, you're welcome to the show.
Hey, George. How's it going tonight?
Okay, Amber. Just in your neck of the woods. I saw the Alamo a few weeks ago.
That's right.
Loved
right after
it.
I saw you in Del Rio.
Yep. Loved it.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Anyway, my question is, you know, statistics, you know, it's humans producing this stuff. They can be manipulated. So when you're publishing your studies, Dr. Shermer, how are you ensuring that whoever's funding them, whoever is originally publishing them before you cite them, has not done them and manipulated their data for their own capital gain?
Right. Well, scientific journals all have, you know, disclaimers. You have to declare if you have any conflicts of interest. You have to declare where your funding comes from and so forth. Now, of course, people can lie, but, you know, the point of peer review is you have two or three, sometimes four other scientists, independent scientists, blinded. You don't even know who they're going to be. And they don't even know who you are. They just read the paper. You know, check the statistics, check the calculations, check the data. You know, it's not 100% foolproof that it'll prevent all fraud or errors, but it's better than having no checks and balances. So that's generally how it works.
Time now for AJ in Buffalo. Hello, AJ. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hey, George. How's it going?
Good.
I just, this conversation, your guest, it reminds me of the quote from somebody. I think it's by Mark Twain, but I could be wrong, that men will believe anything as long as it's not in the Bible. I just have a few questions for him. I can ask them all at once, just to see if he's the honest, reasonable skeptic that he says he is. He seems to take evolution as fact, and I wonder how he cannot be skeptical of evolution when evolution, I'm talking about macroevolution, not microevolution, life, believing that life formed from non-life, that order formed from disorder, believing that evolution would be true when there's no transitional forms that have been found, which even Darwin himself said would have to exist if his theory were true.
Okay, a couple things. One, the origins of life research is pretty rich. We have half a dozen different models for how you go from non-life to life, how you go from, you know, a handful of molecules into complex protein chains, and how the complex protein chains combine into, you know, crude cells and so on. We have a pretty good understanding of this, although we don't have a final theory about how it happened on Earth. Most of that history is erased because of the rock cycle. So the rocks that contain those earliest life forms are gone. So much of this is done, you know, in laboratories using, you know, chemistry, you know, models of chemistry. In any case, then the second part, actually, there's tons of transitional fossils, lots, hundreds and hundreds. If you just pick up any intro evolution book, intro paleontology book, there's tons of pictures of them. Earlier guest mentioned Don Prothero, his book, Evolution, How We Know It's True. You can just look that up at skeptic.com. Or Jerry Coyne's book, Why Evolution is True. You know, there's pictures, tons of pictures of these transitional fossils. And that's not the only line of evidence. The DNA, the genetic evidence, is unbelievably convincing to show the interconnectedness of all life forms. All of us are interconnected, share similar genes and so on, going all the way back. And that's just two lines of evidence. You know, this could go on and on. Evolution's happened. It really did. You know, there's just really not much room for doubt there at all. I mean, again, we don't say anything is 100% in science, but the theory of evolution, the theory of the Big Bang, germ theory of disease, plate tectonics, you know, geology, these things are so well supported that the chances that they could be wrong are very, very slim. I'll throw in there quantum mechanics, global general relativity. These have all been tested over and over and over by tens of thousands of scientists from all over the world. It's real.
Michael, the clock's got us, but good luck in the moral arc, and keep in touch. We'll have you back again.
Thanks. That was great. Yeah, I always enjoy doing your show.
Michael Shermer, you just heard him. We will come back in a moment and talk about Sky People next.